Good morning. It is 8:06. You're listening to KBCW Park City. This is Local News Hour. I'm filling in for Leslie Thatcher. I'm KBCW's Grace Dorfler. In Old Town Park City, it is currently a chilly 11 degrees. Clear skies ahead with a high of 45. In the Heber Valley, 15 degrees with a high of 49. With details about the weather forecast is ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. As we go throughout your Tuesday, expect plenty of sunshine out there. We'll call it one final seasonably cool day, even though temperatures are going to be warming up as we go throughout the day. We're looking at high temperatures climbing into the mid-40s for us in Park City this afternoon with plenty of sunshine. The Heber Valley, look for plenty of sunshine. We'll see these temperatures climbing into the upper 40s across the area. As we go into your Wednesday, expect increasing clouds throughout your Wednesday. Of course, it's New Year's Eve on Wednesday, and we'll be looking at a mixture of clouds and sunshine. Expect more clouds by the afternoon hours. High temperatures climb into the upper 40s to near 50 in Park City, and we'll see those highs in the low 50s for us in the Heber Valley. By the time we get towards your New Year's Eve night, so Wednesday night into Thursday, which is New Year's Day, we're going to be seeing increasing chances for rainfall moving in. And yes, it looks like this system will once again produce primarily rain across the area. You're going to have to go above elevations above 8,000 feet to get into on any snow. And even that snow would be of the high-dense snow that will take place that's hard to accumulate. But for most of us, we're just talking about rain chances and temperatures going from the low to mid-30s on your Thursday morning, the highs in the low to mid-40s in Park City for your New Year's Day. High temperatures will be climbing into the mid to upper 40s for us in the Heber Valley for your New Year's Day. So kind of a wet start to your New Year's, but overall New Year's Day will feature scattered showers, so not a consistent all-day rain, no washout, and we're not really expecting heavy rainfall, just scattered showers Wednesday night into New Year's Day off and on. We'll continue to see the unsettled weather pattern sticking around through the end of the week. We may see a little bit of a lull in the precipitation with just some isolated showers on your Friday, but look for another chance of scattered showers moving in with a second system, which may have some slightly colder air with it. So there's a chance that we could see a little bit of rain in the valleys, in the Heber Valley, as we go into your Saturday and Sunday with highs in the upper 40s. But in Park City, we may get those snow levels low enough to get a few snowflakes mixed in. Right now, still not expecting significant accumulations, but maybe a little sign of winter time returning by the time we head towards the weekend. As we go to your latest forecast of the Wasatch Back, on ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Thank you so much to ABC4's Cedric Haynes for that weather forecast. On the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center is Drew. Drew, how's it looking in the backcountry?
Well, it's interesting, to say the least. We have an overall moderate danger in the backcountry. And we have two separate sets of issues. One I would call manageable and one I would call unmanageable. I mean, when you're out in the backcountry today, you're going to see loose dry, wet loose avalanches in the respective habitats of the storm snow from a couple of days ago, running fast and far on the slick Christmas Eve crusts and pockets of wind slab along the highest elevations, because along the highest elevations, not really on the Park City side, but in the central Cottonwoods up around 10,500, 11,000 feet, you'll see pockets of wind slab up high. And these what I would describe as generally manageable, that are not going to be severe unless you're in what I would call unforgiving terrain. Now, on the other side of the dial, we do have something what I would call low probability, high consequence, and that's triggering a hard slab avalanche that steps 2 to 3 feet deep down into the old faceted snow. You're going to have to collapse that rain crust to get this thing to run. But that did occur in Sunset Peak, and that's between the Alta and Brighton ski areas in the backcountry there. And this was 1 to 3 feet deep and a couple hundred feet wide. It was very close call. And these are the types of avalanches that are going to kill you. Again, low probability, high consequence. And they're going to be only found really above 9,000 feet on the shady aspects. So there's lots going on in the backcountry. But the great equalizer, just to wrap things up, is really the best skiing and riding and the safest skiing and riding are going to be on low-angled slopes in the mid and upper elevations, where that cold snow from the 26th is just sticking around, and it's excellent skiing and riding, and it's going to be safe. And that's where I'd go. It's the best and the safest conditions in the backcountry. As always, you can get more information, utahavalanchecenter.org.
Drew, thank you so much for that forecast.
Thanks. Have a great week.
You too. That was Drew from the Utah Avalanche Center with this morning's forecast. You are listening to KPCW's Local News Hour. I'm Grace Dorfler, filling in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. Taking a quick look at the traffic across the Wasatch Back, we are seeing some minor slowdowns around the Kimball Junction area. If you're heading eastbound on I-80, you can expect some small delays as you're heading towards that Kimball Junction exit, as well as if you're headed towards that US 40 junction to head towards Heber City. We're also seeing some backups along 248 if you're heading into town through that east end of town. As far as the Heber Valley goes, I'm not seeing any major slowdowns there to report. I'll let you know if that changes. Looking ahead to the show for this morning, up first, we're going to hear from Woodward Park City's Marketing Director, Jay Burke. He's got the latest snow status and upcoming events for skiers and riders. After that, we'll hear from UDOT's Region 3 spokesperson, Wyatt Woolley. He'll share more details about the Heber Valley bypass decision that's coming out next week, plus a look ahead at the Wasatch County Transportation Project in 2026. And then to close out the hour, we'll have an update from the Utah State Parks. There's a lot going on this winter, and Ali O'Rellian will have the rundown from the parks. That's all coming up in the next hour here on Local News Hour. After that is This Green Earth. It'll be a Best of 2025 special edition. You're listening to KPCW. We'll be right back after this. A hockey dad is suing a nonprofit Park City Hockey Club for access to its books. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the club's president is accused of mishandling team finances.
The nonprofit hockey club, Park City Ice Miners, is mired in legal trouble after a parent sued for access to its financial records. Summit County resident Ben Arnold believes the records may show, quote, potential private benefit or self-dealing issues or IRS violations. PCIM has asked a court to dismiss the lawsuit Arnold first filed in October. The club says the suit seeks to malign the hockey club's board of trustees and its president, Matt Prucka. But after that initial request in 3rd District Court, Arnold doubled down in an amended complaint December 12th, claiming he and one of his kids have faced retaliation because of the concerns he's raised. PCIM has not filed a response to the new allegations, and Prucka didn't respond to KPCW's emails December 26th and 29th. But the hockey club has characterized Arnold's requests as a fishing expedition. Its earlier court papers state Arnold's, quote, vague allegations obfuscate his true desire, a broad intrusion into Mr. Prucka's personal bank accounts and finances. But Arnold says Prucka used his personal accounts for PCIM business, specifically his personal Venmo. The legal dispute isn't whether those funds were properly used or accounted for so much as whether PCIM has provided Arnold with all the accounting documents he's legally entitled to review. The hockey club says it has provided everything Arnold is allowed to have. Arnold's asking the court to force PCIM to fork over more. Arnold is asking for a jury trial in 3rd District Court. A trial date has not yet been set. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, on the phone with us this morning is Woodward Park City's Marketing Director, Jay Burke. Jay, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us this morning. Well,
thank you.
To start out, despite a challenging start to the winter weather-wise, you guys opened up for the season Thanksgiving weekend. Can you talk a little bit about what you've been able to open so far over at Woodward?
Yeah, we did get open Thanksgiving weekend. It was a bit of a push for us, and we were kind of juggling around what we wanted to get open, but inevitably opened some of our lower tubing lanes that weekend, and then shortly thereafter opened a small jib park offering off of our gateway conveyor. And since then, we've been able to open our hot laps lift, and we have a rundown off the top with some features down lower on the hill as well.
Gotcha. And tell me a little bit about snowmaking at Woodward. What kind of capacity do you have, and how do you figure out when it's time to blow snow with weather like we've been having?
Yeah, well, as everyone knows, I mean, we had extremely warm or abnormally warm temperatures leading into the Christmas week, which made it difficult to basically, a non-existent snowmaking program. You know, but we've been able to be blowing snow the last couple of nights, actually all day, you know, and that's helping greatly. We can cover almost all of our mountain, frankly. So we've been full gas, so to say, trying to get more snow out on the hill so we can add more features into our terrain parks.
Yeah, makes sense. I'm sure this cooler weather this week is giving you guys a little bit of help in that regard.
Oh, for sure. We welcome it, and certainly would love to see more from Mother Nature, but you know, we'll see how that shakes out here in the next few days.
I guess so. There is a lot going on at Woodward, both indoors and outside. Could you give us a rundown of what's open to the public right now?
Yeah, basically, we're open 100%, indoor, outdoor. We have some of our winter seasonal programs are coming up. I mean, for those of you that are local and can, you know, bring your kids over every week, we've got space remaining in a lot of those programs, and that's from the young ones all the way up to a developmental style program that's season long, snowboard and ski. And as well for people that are interested or going to be in town on the breaks during the winter breaks, we have two different camps, one during the MLK weekend and then one later over President's Day. And again, those are both for ski and snowboard ages 7 to 17.
Sounds good. What's the price for those programs?
Well, that camp program is $449 per child. So a great opportunity all day, 9:30 to 3:30, lunch is included. Great way for the kids to just get completely immersed in a little program, you know, without the full commitment to the season.
Mm-hmm. You said that there's a whole bunch of different kinds of seasonal programs. Could you give us a sense of what kind of variety you have for those?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, for developmental, like, so where you're a little further along in your progress, we have both a snowboard and a ski Devo team. And again, those are all season long, all day programs. And then we have younger groups as well. Mountain minis is what we like to call those. Ages 4 to 6, those are Saturdays and Sundays, 4-week sessions, and you know, just a great way to get the kids a taste of, you know, whether it's skiing or snowboarding, you know, where they can get a full season. Again, lunches are included, it's consistency and coaching, you know, and the ease of access that Woodward offers. You know, it's easy in, easy out up from the parking lot, nice little easy walk up to the actual snow. So we really encourage parents to take a look at those product offerings.
Sounds good. So really something for all ages and all abilities.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned all ages, you know, folks maybe don't realize the depth of our teaching programs out here, and I'll focus in on maybe some older skiers and snowboarders that are looking to up their game. Let's say you've kind of got the basics down, but you want to learn how to do, let's say, your first 360. You know, we can take you into a private program and nearly guarantee that, you know, we'll get you around on your first trick. You know, so there are things like that. We offer group lessons as well. So if there's a handful of people that want to come out and try some particular trick, and that could be indoors as well. That could be a skateboard trick, or, you know, working into our mega ramp on perhaps a backflip or something like that. And our mega ramp indoors is into a foam pit. So very controlled environment, safe, yeah, great opportunity. And you know, we love offering this to everyone here in Park City.
Good to hear. Thanks, Jay. I'd love to talk a little bit about season passes. This is new this year, mountain park thing. How's this different from a Woodward membership like you've offered before?
Yeah, when Woodward first opened their doors back in 2018, you know, the big push was to have an all-access membership, and we still offer that, and it's one of our most popular product offerings, but you know, we really wanted to have a product that aligned a little bit better with what the other resorts were doing locally. So we've brought a product to market this year called the Mountain Park Season Pass, which gives you just that access to our mountain park all season long, and we offer one in the summer as well. Just FYI. But you know, we view ourselves as that fantastic place for people along the Wasatch Front, those of you that are listening in Salt Lake, to folks up here in Park City. You know, it's kind of place where you, again, because of the easy in, easy out, easy access to the mountain, you know, can come over and ride for 60, 90 minutes, you know, and maybe that's in the afternoon after you're done working. Mm-hmm. So we feel it's a really great product. And like I said, it kind of aligns us a little bit better to have similar offerings as the other resorts do locally.
Are there any blackout days for those passes?
No, there aren't actually. What you do get though are two tickets to share. So, for instance, if you have a child or something that you'd like to bring along with you, you know, you have two of those to share through the season as well. So, and the buy-in on that pass is $4.99 currently, mm-hmm. And again goes through the season. And hopefully, we can get into April this year.
Yeah. So it's not too late to buy a winter season pass this year?
No, it is not. They are still on sale, and you can find those at woodwardparkcity.com. There's a entry point right on the homepage to check out the full details on that pass.
Sounds good. And then when will you, I guess, flip over to your summer pass season?
Well, we'll, you know, I mean, that's always kind of a moving target. Last year, we were open early in June. We stayed open into early October. And I think, you know, depending on what we have for snow on the ground and how the spring, you know, progresses, you know, is always what plays into that determination on, you know, when we'll be able to get open. But I would say early June is when we start to look at you know, being open up for the mountain.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what nature wants this year.
Yeah. Well, we're all hoping for snow for so many different reasons. So I'm gonna keep that hat on for a while.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, anything else you'd like to mention in terms of winter events, winter opportunities at Woodward?
Well, I just like to encourage everyone to visit our website occasionally and kind of check out what we have going on, you know, from an event perspective, because we do host a ton of really super events throughout the year, actually. And we have Play Forever Fridays, which are a great way to come experience Woodward Park City. You can get $35 lift or an indoor ticket, either or. And typically we'll partner with someone like YSA, for instance, on that Friday. So we give a portion of all those proceeds to that nonprofit. But it is a fantastic way for folks to come over, and see everything that we have to offer, from the skateboarding indoors to, you know, jumping into the mega pits, working on tricks, or just having fun jumping on the trampolines. We have a spring-loaded floor for gymnastics and parkour. And then, not forgetting to mention our food and beverage offering, which a lot of folks maybe don't realize we have. So we have a bar that we call the Grind. And as well, we have the Hive, which is where we serve food from that location. So, you know, if you're coming out here to hang with the kids, you can enjoy maybe something that might be screening up on the big screens in the bar, and paying attention to what the kids are doing out on the floor as well. So it makes kind of a fun evening.
Sounds good. Well, lots going on, Jay.
There's always a lot going on at Woodward. And again, we encourage people to check out the website and find something that suits their needs.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for all of this info.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
Have a good one. We've been talking with Jay Burke from Woodward Park City. You're listening to KPCW's Local News Hour. Park City's first female mayor, Nan Worrell, is retiring from public office. KPCW's Christine Weller reports she is most proud of conserving almost 430 acres of land while mayor.
Nan Worrell has spent much of her time in Park City serving the public. She served for 15 years on the Park City Planning Commission, Park City Council, and finally made history as the city's first female mayor in 2022. While her four-year term is now coming to an end, Worrell said she's proud of what she was able to accomplish. Top of her list was conserving more than 100 acres on Treasure Hill and almost 330 acres of Clark Ranch as open space.
I love that we've saved land. I love that we've cleaned up our water. We opened the Three Kings Water Treatment Plant, which is the largest infrastructure project in the history of Park City, and cut the ribbon on that a year ago.
Worrell is also proud of the work she and the council have done to provide affordable housing to locals. Most recently, she cut the ribbon on the Engine House development, which includes 99 affordable units. She also recognized the city's child care program, which earned a national award. The council started the scholarship program in 2023 and allocated $1 million to it. The money helped families with infants and toddlers afford child care.
The council stepped out on a limb, and we weren't really sure what we were supposed to be doing, but we knew we should be doing something. And so we came up with this program, and it's been wildly successful.
Ryan Dickey will be sworn in as the new mayor January 5th. In retirement, Worrell said she's looking forward to volunteering, getting back to her book club, and spending time at her Florida home. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And UDOT's Region 3 spokesperson Wyatt Woolley stopped by the station to pay us a visit. Wyatt, how are you?
Good morning. How are you doing, Grace?
I'm pretty good, thanks. Well, there is a lot going on in your area these days. Most notably, of course, is the bypass decision, the long-awaited Heber Valley bypass. Could you briefly remind listeners what the two finalists are that UDOT's deciding between?
Well, there's two alternatives in this study. It's called an environmental impact study that we've been doing for the last 5 years. And we have alternative A and alternative B. And between the two of them, the only main difference is B goes through the North Fields, and then A goes up North 40 there, of north of town. So it's mostly between those two alternatives. And on January 7th, we'll release what we call the draft EIS, the draft environmental impact statement, where we'll say what the study has chosen, which of those two alternatives we've chosen.
Mm-hmm. And once that draft EIS is out, there will be, 60 days that people can comment?
Yes, starting that Friday, you'll be able to make public comment. And then we will also have a virtual meeting at the end of January 27th, and 28th will be the public hearing, and there will be a 60-day, public comment period.
How can people give feedback, and what kind of comments are helpful?
Well, that's a good question, Grace, because the worst kind of comment is, I don't like it. And we know we're going to get that. Or we love it. It's like, why? Why do you love it? Or why do you like it? Or why do you hate it? Give us very specific reasons. Like, I don't like how it's going to restrict my access. So I don't like the way you're going to move cars over here. I don't like how it's going to ruin this for this. Very, get very detailed into your description as to why. And just so you know, we look at every single one of the comments, all of them. So keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. What happens to the comments?
They go into the EIS, the study. Mm-hmm. They are compiled in together, and they are all, sometimes what we'll do is we'll group similar comments together and try to give a formulated response for all of them, and they're all responded to.
Yeah, but I mean, the UDOT decision is based on factors like traffic rather than public comment, right? So
we factor in everything, yeah. That's true. We have to do what's best for the study, and the study is based upon basically one thing, the purpose and need of that study. And the purpose and need of this study is regional traffic through the valley, Heber Valley, which is basically cars that just want to go through and trucks that want to go through the valley. And also, the second part of that is going through Main Street, which is US 40 Main Street Heber, and helping protect Heber Main Street, the flow of traffic across it and through it, and protect historic downtown Main Street. So that's two parts to the study, the purpose and need that this study is going to fulfill.
Understood. Yeah. And I saw that you're asking people to sign up to make public comments at the hearing. Is that right? How will people be able to sign up?
At the public hearing?
Okay. They don't need to register in advance? Or?
No. They don't need to register in advance. You can just show up. We anticipate a lot of people coming out and wanting to speak their mind and to give everyone a fair chance. We are limited to 3 minutes per person for their comments. And then it'll be the next person. So there'll be a clock and there'll be a panel and they'll record everything and we'll take it all down that way.
Good to know. And then after that public comment period closes, how long do you anticipate it will take for UDOT to, you know, get to the record of decision?
It'll be a few months after that, probably in the fall.
Yeah.
Once they compile everything. It's a very thorough process, a very long process. This has been about 5 years coming since 2020. And as most people know, when we started, most EISs, there's three different types of studies. There's an EX, which is exclusion. There is an EA, which is environmental assessment, and then the EIS, environmental impact statement, which means it's the most impactful. They usually take a couple years, but halfway through this one, almost to the end of it when we were doing it, is we got new traffic demand model, which means they gave us new data that said there's a lot more anticipated traffic by the year 2050 than what we were anticipating. And so we had to go back and relook at it and relook at all the numbers and make sure we're doing what's best to fit that purpose and need. So that's why it's been taking 5 years, and it's a very, very thorough process.
Does that happen often, that you get a new traffic model that causes you to throw out your plans?
No, we do get traffic models that come out, I think, every 4 years or so, and we always look at them, and usually the data comes like, okay, that's in line with what we're expecting and anticipating. But this one, it was a lot more. And so we're like, we need to reassess this and make sure that we're doing what's best for the project.
Yeah, understood. The price tag for this highway is going to be significant. It looks like over $500 million.
Yes.
That's a lot of money. Where does it come from?
All of our funds for all of our project come from the state legislature. Mm-hmm. So the state legislature in Utah has been very generous to UDOT and to its citizens of UDOT and everyone that travels through Utah, is that we have been given a large portion from taxpayer dollars to build our infrastructure and our roads, and it is significant. So keep in mind that we always do what the legislature wants us to do, basically, and they give us a large portion of money based upon what we tell them is the need with all these studies that we do, and this is one of them. We see a need, we do a study, we say this looks like this is the project, this is why, this is where, and we say how much, and they say okay or no or whatever. Usually they say okay, which is nice, and then they put that money basically in a box. It's not even money. They say we will fund this. So basically say this money is attributed to this project in the next couple of years or whatever, and then the money from the legislature, the taxpayers, will get funneled to it, and it becomes a project and gets funded that way.
Do you ever get money from federal sources as well?
Yeah, we do. We get money from the federal government and also from grants and things like that. So yes, we are always looking for that kind of money too, because roads are expensive.
Yeah. Will that be a factor for the bypass then?
Oh yeah, we'll look for it. We'll look for it for sure.
Good to hear. Last question about the bypass. Do you think it's still in the cards to finish this highway by the 2034 Olympics?
That's a good question. It's going to take a long time to do any type of project this large. And just so everyone to know, we have a program. We have what we call a STIP, statewide improvement program for the entire state. And we usually program those out for several years. And we're programmed out to the year 2031, which means all the money for all the projects is allocated to the year 2031. So based upon that, we wouldn't be able to even start a project till 2032. Now, that being said, the Utah State Legislature could step in and say, no, we want this one to be top priority for the Olympics, or maybe Kibble Junction or transit or whatever it is. And they say, nope, this one's first, put it to the top of the list, and then it can get funded that way. That's very rare that would happen, but that's a possibility.
Yeah. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move on to another big project in Wasatch County, 189 Widening. How are things looking with excavation? I know you guys have been doing some blasting and that kind of thing.
Yes, there's two parts of it. We got the blasting more towards the northeast end, closest to Charleston right there. It's very hard rock right there. We couldn't just dig through it. We have to blast and break it up. And when we do that, we got to close the road. So sorry, everybody, but that is what we have to do to keep everyone safe. I was there when they did the first one, the first test, which was our biggest explosion, if you will, and it went really well. And we were able to close the road for about 20 minutes and then reopen it, and then they were able to go and do their excavating. The other part is around the other bend by that, what's that restaurant, the Rainbow Bay area, where we're having to dig through the mountain. Now, again, we have to protect the people from rocks falling down, right? So we have to close the road for that one. Now, that one, we have to close it for a lot longer, like we did that Saturday night for 6 hours, because it's bulldozers and things going through and digging the mountain.
Right.
And stuff can fall down and inevitably will a little bit. And they got most of it done from what I saw, but I think they're probably going to have to do another big closure here somewhere in mid-January, maybe for another Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Well, they'll close it to, hopefully that'll be the last one. They'll dig it all out and get it all excavated.
Okay, so maybe one more major closure?
Yes.
Okay. And is the timeline still on track for that project?
Currently, yes.
Yeah, good to hear. What traffic impacts can people expect otherwise with that project if they're making that commute through the canyon? Will there be more like lane closures?
Yes, there'll be some flagging sometimes when they have to close things or work on things, especially during that closure. When they do the little blasting that they may have to do during the week, those will be like 15 minutes, a half hour closure at most, maybe. Mm-hmm. But because it is a closure, it will likely make a queue that will back up, so you'll expect delays during that time. The blasting will likely happen around 10 a.m., we determined that was the best time of day, the least amount of morning traffic and stuff for people to get through. And when I was there and we did it, traffic moved freely right after we did it, and we were able to do it pretty quickly. So it wasn't too bad. And even our night, that weekend closure, that was 6 hours. I was worried about that one, but we only had one truck that we had to turn around.
That's pretty good. I guess you got the word out pretty effectively then.
Yeah, I guess we did.
Excellent. In our last couple of minutes, what other projects are you looking forward to in 2026 for this Wasatch County region?
For Heber, I would say the widening from 40, from that connection at 189 down past the hospital down there.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be doing that widening project starting this next year, yeah.
And a new traffic light along with it, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Another traffic light will be coming, though, so that'll be good for that connection there.
Yeah. Great to hear. And there's a website, I understand, where people can get all their Heber Valley project updates.
Yes, I think the best way to go to it is just type in UDOT Heber Valley projects, and it should be the first website that you see, and it should have the main page will have a map of all the projects we have going on in the area. And we're going to try to keep that updated, and there'll be links to all the major projects if you need more detailed information, but that should keep you informed of all the projects happening in the Heber Valley area.
Good to know. Well, Wyatt, anything else you'd like to add this morning?
No, just I hope everyone has a safe and lovely New Year's Eve and drive safe out there.
Same to you. Thank you so much, Wyatt.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Region 3 spokesperson Wyatt Woolley from UDOT. Well, on the phone with me is Utah State Parks spokesperson Ali Arulian. Ali, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, Grace. It's great to talk to you today.
Thank you so much for calling in. I'm looking forward to hearing more about the parks.
I'm looking forward to talk about them. I love them. So I love to talk about them.
Great to hear. Well, it's going to be a really busy January at all the state parks across Utah. Could you tell me a little bit to start about the first day hikes, these New Year's Day hikes happening all over the state?
Yes, of course. So I don't know about you, but I have spent many a New Year's Day a little bit lethargic after the night previous, just kind of tired, starting off late. And so these first day hikes are an initiative to start the year on the right foot, so to speak, pardon the pun. So parks across the state are hosting ranger-led hikes for visitors to start 2026 in the state parks. And as an additional bonus, each person who attends a first day hike can get a limited edition sticker. So if you're a sticker person, go to a first day hike. So we have 8 parks in the state that are hosting these first day hikes. So up in this northern central region, we have Antelope Island, Dordanelle, Wasatch Mountain, and theirs is a little bit easier because it is on January 2nd, so you still get that first day hike, but it's a second day if you're really tired on January 1st. And Willard Bay, if you're out east or planning to spend New Year's in the east side of the state, we have Dead Horse Point, Goblin Valley, and then down south we have Sand Hollow and Snow Canyon. So it's just really fun, and if you're new to winter hiking and you want to get started with a ranger-led hike, this is a great way to do it. Start it off, you know, most of these are pretty easy for everyone to enjoy, and you can get out on January 1st and get in a state park.
Good to hear. I'm sure our listeners in Summit and Wasatch counties will be glad to hear there's offerings here in the Wasatch back. I saw those parks locally also have things like Wasatch Mountain State Park has snowshoe hikes and things like that. What other ways are the rangers, you know, getting people outdoors throughout this winter when it might not be as accessible to get to the parks as in the summer?
Yeah, well, I mean, some people might be wanting more snow. Some people might be happy with the lack of stuff that we're getting. Whatever winter weather you prefer, there are ways to get out in the parks. So at Wasatch Mountain, actually that first day hike, that's technically a second day hike, is a moonlight snowshoe hike. And you're able to snowshoe through Wasatch Mountain State Park through the moonlight. They have a beginner and a more intermediate trail that they're doing. Again, that's ranger led. So if you haven't been snowshoeing before, this is a great way to start. And you have to reserve that one prior to attendance, but they can also provide gear. They're available for rent at the visitor center. But there are other events that Wasatch Mountain is hosting. They have a couple of snowshoe hikes in January. And then at Dordanelle State Park, there are a lot of ranger programs that are happening at the Nature Center there, which is like stuff where you learn about snowflakes and that are very kid-friendly, but also adult-friendly if you want to learn more about snowflakes and, you know, want to cut one out for a fun activity. And so those are fun ways to get out and get into the parks. You can really start easy anywhere if you're trying to figure out what you like to do outdoors during the winter time. But if you are definitely not a hiking person, completely understand. Winter is also a really great time for bird watching. So at Willard Bay, which is outside of that Wasatch County area, but just a tip, really great bald eagle sighting. They tend to congregate there during the winter. But at Wasatch Mountain, they're actually doing a bird count. So that's going to be this Saturday, January 3rd, which is a citizen science survey where the goal is to count up all the bird species and individuals in the area. So it's going to be a long and fast-paced day depending on which area you count. So, you know, whether you're wanting to go out and snowshoe, whether you're wanting to hike, you know, with ice bikes, whether you're rather, you know, sit, watch birds, or head to an educational program, there are plenty of ways for people to get to the parks, get outside, or just enjoy nature this time of year.
And how cool that a lot of them involve rangers, like teaching people more about the wildlife and the plants around them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there are ways that you can go out and by yourself, take a hike and enjoy that. Fully encourage people to get out on their own or with friends. But we have rangers there that want to tell you more about the parks, make you more educated about what you're seeing, what you're experiencing, and want to try and help improve that experience for you or get you started if you haven't done it before. So check out ranger programs. They're really great, and our rangers would be very, very happy to see you there.
Sounds good. And what's the best way for people to stay in the loop about what's going on at their closest park?
Yeah, so Utah State Parks has our website, and we have a calendar that has basically all of the events happening for each month and sometimes a little bit after that current month. If you're not a website person, on social media, on the Utah State Parks social media pages on Instagram and Facebook, we post the different events happening throughout the month at the beginning of the month, so you can kind of plan ahead. And then parks on their own website will also have their events listed there. So the calendar page is pretty simple. It's stateparks.utah.gov/calendar. Or if you just Google Utah State Parks calendar, it'll come up. On our social media, you can look up Utah State Parks or UT State Parks, or you can just look up their websites, and on the events tab, it'll be on there. So you can keep up to date in all of those different ways.
Sounds good. And then I, you know, with the temperature fluctuating so much here, you know, it's spring one day and winter the next. What's your best advice for caring for the trails for people getting out hiking, biking? How can people be mindful about that?
Yeah, I mean, you always want to just plan ahead and prepare. So be mindful. One, first and foremost, keep yourself safe. So check the conditions. Scope out the trail. If you're new to winter hiking, try with some trail that you've done before, something that's a little bit easier. Don't push yourself too early. You want to stay safe. We suggest bringing a friend. That way, in case there's an emergency, you have someone there with you. And definitely let someone know where you're going. In terms of keeping, you know, trail health and keeping the trails good, make sure you pack in what you pack out. Don't leave any trash out there. Even, you know, different food can be considered trash. You might think that, you know, a banana peel is fine because it's nature. But actually, you know, think about it this way. Bananas don't grow in the Wasatch Front. That's not their natural environment. So the animals around there aren't going to want to eat bananas. And they also probably bananas won't sit well in their stomachs, but also a banana won't decompose in the same way. And so months down the line, somebody could see your banana peel, and nobody wants that. We don't want to see trash of any kind. So pack in what you pack out. And then just make sure that you have the right gear. Again, with this fluctuating weather, you really want to check conditions so you kind of know what you're you know, going into. And you can always call the visitor centers and ask about conditions on trails. We have rangers there who are ready to help and happy to help.
Sounds good. And anything else you would recommend packing for this time of year?
Yes, of course. So if you're going out winter hiking, I'll try and make this pretty quick. One, you need a backpack. Doesn't have to be anything special, just something to bring extra layers in. Two, sunscreen. I think we've all had a snow burn before where the snow reflects on your face and you get a sunburn. So make sure you pack that sunscreen. You're going to want your phone as communication method. Keep it warm. Keep it close to you so that in case of emergency, you can call. Even if it says that you don't have reception, you can still call 911 in case of emergency, and they may be able to locate you and can start there. You want a navigational tool. Because of the cold weather, batteries can die quicker. So make sure that you have something not battery charged, like a map. of course, you want water. In the winter, it can kind of fool us into thinking that we're hydrated, but actually you can get dehydrated quicker. So carry water in an insulated container or even wrap it in a wool sock before putting it in your backpack. That way it doesn't freeze. Just keep in mind that dehydration speeds up the onset of hypothermia. So really make sure to stay hydrated. Along those same lines, bring snacks. You're going to be exercising in cold weather, which burns more calories since your body is working hard to stay warm. So protein, carbs, and of course, salty snacks to keep hydrated. You're going to want a first aid kit and be familiar with it so that you don't bring a first aid kit and then you're like, what's actually in here when you need it? And then depending on conditions, you might need ice spikes, which could be micro spikes, which are just kind of like small little spikes that you adhere to your boots, or crampons, which are a little bit larger. And of course, make sure you have the right clothes. So layers is definitely important. In the winter, you're going to want to have a base layer, an insulating layer, and a shell on top. If you start to get hot, remove those layers before you get sweaty. Try to avoid cotton and opt for synthetic fabrics that wick moisture and are quick drying. You want to, if it's very snowy, which not too snowy right now, but, you know, hopefully it'll get snowier, consider wearing a base layer and then a waterproof layer for your bottoms. Always pack a pair of gloves. Always bring a hat. Make sure you have waterproof boots that are insulated and have thermal socks. And again, those micro spikes that I talked about, because hiking on ice without spikes is not fun. It's very slippery, very home alone on the stairs. So try to avoid it.
We don't want that. Thank you so much for those tips. I also wanted to ask you, as we're heading into 2026 and people are looking ahead to purchase their state parks passes for the year, what options are available?
Yeah, so one, of course, we have the annual state parks pass, and so you can order that online. We have digital passes that are available at parkspass.utah.gov. The digital passes are good for the day of purchase only, so those are day of passes, but you can buy your annual pass online. Once you get your annual pass, you can put in a code that on the app, the Utah State Parks app will have it on your phone, and then also a physical copy. In-person purchases can be made at the state parks, so you can buy them at the state park that you're going to, at regional offices or the Utah DNR bookstore in Salt Lake City. Get yourself a pass. They are a great way to get outdoors, and if you may have forgotten a gift for the holidays, you can get one now. Or if you're just wanting to have a year outdoors, you know, we really encourage you guys to buy passes. But there are also lots of parks that do park-specific passes. So check in with your local parks if you're like, I only go here or I only go here. Look into that. But I would suggest a state park pass because there are 46 wonderful parks in the state of Utah. And 2026 should be the year that you go and visit them. So highly encourage it.
Good to know. Thank you so much.
Yeah, happy to talk about it.
Awesome. And then just in our last minute or two here, I wanted to end on a lighthearted note. I heard that the state parks are having a baking challenge where you're trying to bake something park related. Could you tell me a little bit about what that contest has yielded?
Oh, of course. The Great Utah State Park Bake Challenge, of course. It is a spinoff that we're doing of the Great British Bake Off. It's just a lighthearted activity where we encouraged park staff to bake something state park related because around the holidays, like, it's just so nice to have a treat in the break room to walk in. I mean, I feel like that's everyone's favorite thing when you walk in and there's a surprise treat. So we encouraged our park rangers to bake something. So we got a bunch of really great stuff. So at Deer Creek, one of the rangers made a pull-apart snowflake pastry. This is all on our social media if you want to check it out. It looked very delicious. At Snow Canyon, there was a cinder cone chocolate cake, a White Rocks cake, and a visitor center gingerbread house. At Wasatch Mountain, the ranger there made chocolate granola that looked like raccoon scat. It cracked me up. At Echo, There was a winter tree puff pastry and raspberry lemon bars that kind of looked like a sunset. And at East Canyon, they made a sourdough that was scored in the shape of the reservoir. So very talented rangers in more than just park-related things. We have a bunch of great bakers out there. And if anyone out there is so inclined, feel free to bake something state parks related too. I will always encourage people to bake, especially in the winter. Have something cozy, have something park related. But yeah, it was really fun, and it was such a great way to get a lot of parks involved and, you know, making a fun park related treat.
Awesome. That's all we have time for today, but thank you so much, Allie.
Thank you, Grace. It was great to talk to you today.
Have a good one.